original plan was that the journey we have been on throughout the summer months, that I titled Summer in the Psalms, would end Labor Day weekend when Pastor Brendan spoke. That week I was away for just, Rhonda and I, for a week of just spiritual renewal at the Billy Graham Training Center, and I found myself being drawn to yet another psalm. I found myself reading it repeatedly. I found myself meditating on it and the beauty of the Blue Ridge Mountains there. I just returned to it every single day and sometimes a couple times a day. And I decided that it would be okay to share one more message in the Summer in the Psalms series, in that it is still summer. That's going to change later this week. I don't know if that's going to change by temperature. It's been just beautiful the last few days and supposed to be warm into next week. But I wanted to bring one additional message to you from the Summer in the Psalms series. Pastor Brendan spoke from chapter 39. I would like to speak to you today from chapter 40. Now, again, this is a summer series. We've only looked at about 12 different psalms in what's known as the first book, chapters 1 through 40. Perhaps at another time we will move on and continue our series in the Psalms. But today I would like for us to look at Psalm chapter 40. If you would turn there with me for the reading of God's Word, and if you would stand with me. Psalm chapter 40, another psalm of David. Of all of the psalms that we have looked at, all but one of them have been psalms of David. It says, I waited patiently for the Lord. He turned to me and heard my cry. He lifted me out of the slimy pit, out of the mud and mire. He set my feet on a rock and gave me a firm place to stand. He put a new song in my mouth, a hymn of praise to our God. Many will see and fear the Lord and put their trust in Him. Blessed is the one who trusts in the Lord, who does not look to the proud, to those who turn aside to false gods. Many, Lord my God, are the wonders you have done. The things you have planned for us, none can compare with you. Were I to speak and tell of your deeds, they would be too many to declare. May the Lord add His blessings to the reading of His Word, and you may be seated. There's a lot in this psalm. There's a lot more in this psalm, but we're going to primarily focus on these first five verses. I've titled my message today, What Are You Waiting For? What are you waiting for? If you're really living, you're waiting for something. There is something that you're looking forward to, something that you are waiting on. Maybe it's something that needs to change in your life, or you're waiting on a particular opportunity, a particular promise to be fulfilled. But I would begin by asking you that question, what are you waiting on? As I've already stated, this is a psalm of David, Israel's greatest king. And though far from perfect, we know that he was a man after God's own heart. Now, many of the Psalms of David that we find, and it's almost half of the book of Psalms are written by David, many of them we can place in a particular time, in a particular context of an event of David's life. Sometimes we can narrow it down to an actual day or even a time of day that David wrote a particular psalm. However, Psalm chapter 40, we don't know exactly where to place that in David's life. It may have been during the difficult exile years of his life. Perhaps it was during the early years of his reign. We know that even in this psalm, most Bible commentators believe that about half of Psalm 40 refers to one incident, about half refers to another incident in David's life. We also know that in this psalm, there is a wide range of emotions that are expressed here. And parts of this psalm can be found elsewhere. For example, we can find part of this psalm in Psalm chapter 70. Also, Hebrews chapters 10 quotes verses 6, 7, and 8. This psalm is ultimately a testimony of what God did for David. Now, in order to have a testimony, we all love a good testimony, don't we? We love very dramatic testimonies, and when we hear about how God has brought about great deliverance and brought about great miracles, but guess what? To have a testimony, you first have to have a test. And sometimes that test can be a big test. Sometimes that test can be a long test. But in order to have a testimony, you must have a test. And even though we don't know what test David experienced here, we know that he had a very intense test, and we're able to relate to it. Did you notice how many of the songs that we sang today could have been taken right out of these verses of Scriptures? And so let's take a look at this particular time in David's life. You know, I believe that here there is a word from the Lord for you today. I believe there's a word for the Lord for you today if you have served Him 50 plus years. I believe that there is a word from the Lord from this text for you today if you have never yet established a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. We all know what it is to wait. Look at verse 1. Here we see our part and God's part. You know, as we walk with the Lord, as we come into a relationship with the Lord, we discover that there is that which only God can do, and there is that which only we can do. And David declared the first three words here, I waited patiently. I waited patiently. Do you find that easy to do? Do you find it easy to wait patiently on the Lord? David said, I waited patiently. Literally, these words could be translated, I waited and I waited. Again, what is it that you're waiting for? What is it that you could say like David, I waited and I am still waiting? One of the most difficult and challenging things you will ever do in life is wait. Is wait. For a prayer to be answered, for a promise to be fulfilled, for a family member or friend to turn to the Lord, for a financial breakthrough, for perhaps a business opportunity to succeed, for deliverance or rescue in a situation in your life. This has been referred to from the time a prayer is prayed and we actually see the answer, or a promise is given and that promise is actually fulfilled, has often been referred to as the in-between time. Did you know that most of your Christian life is lived in the in-between time? In the in-between time. Some of David's greatest psalms were not written when he actually became the king and on some of the great days of his life. There are some that were written during that time. But some of the greatest psalms that David ever penned, the ones that help us the most, the ones that we lean upon the most, the ones that we claim the most, are the psalms that David wrote during the in-between times of his life. And oftentimes those in-between times were very, very difficult times for David. Dr. R.T. Kendall, who Rhonda and I recently spent a week with, said that there are two types of God's presence. Now, I had certainly thought this before, but it really hadn't sunk in before. There are two types of God's presence. First of all, there is God's conscious presence. That's when we are so very aware of His presence in our lives. You can look back into your own life when you were aware of His presence. Perhaps it was at an altar experience, when you came to the altar and someone prayed with you or someone prayed for you. Perhaps it was a worship experience that you had that was like none other, that you so felt the presence of God. For others, it may have been on a spiritual retreat. It may have been God's intervention, a very difficult time in your life. It may have been a physical healing. It may have been a financial provision. It was a sudden answer to prayer. And you just felt the presence of God. If you're here today and you know the Lord, go back in your mind to those times when you so felt God's conscious presence. However, there's another kind of God's presence, and that is His unconscious presence. And that's when God is with us even when we don't feel Him. Even when we're not experiencing Him in our lives. There are times that God may seem far away, that our prayers may seem like they're just sort of being prayed in the air, that there doesn't seem any real manifest presence of God in our life. Christians sometimes refer to these as dry spells. We refer to them as desert experiences. Sometimes they are for a short period of time. Sometimes they are for a season, or they're for a very prolonged period of time. But there is God's conscious presence. There's also God's unconscious presence. He is with us even if we do not feel Him. Yet we must wait. What is it that you are waiting for? When you wait, God acts. When you act, God waits. Did you get that? When you wait, God acts. He may not act on your timetable, but when you wait, God acts. When you act, God waits. Have you ever had the experience of getting ahead of God and making decisions that were not of God? It's not always easy to wait upon God, but it's always worth it to wait upon God. Often during times of waiting, when we don't feel His presence, but looking back, we can say with Jacob, whose experiences of meeting the Lord at Bethel, he said when he woke from his sleep, Genesis 28:16, he thought, "Surely the Lord is in this place, and I was not aware of it." Have you had those experiences in your life when you're in the midst of what you're going through, when you're in the midst of the adversity or the difficulty or the trial or the grief? You don't sense God's presence. You may even cry out, "Where are you, God?" And David did that so often in the Psalms. He would cry out, "God, where are you?" But you will look back and say, "Surely the Lord was in this place, and I was not aware of it." Or the story that's found in Luke chapter 24, the two disciples on the road to Emmaus on that first resurrection day, and they're walking along, and someone joins along in their journey and walks with them and talks with them and finally is about to share a meal with them. And this person is inquiring about all the things that have happened in Jerusalem. The two disciples are amazed that this man does not know what has taken place over the last few days. And suddenly, as he was about to bless the food, and he disappeared before their eyes. It was one of the post-resurrection appearances of Jesus. Those two disciples, looking back in Luke chapter 24, verse 32, says, "Were not our hearts burning within us while he talked with us on the road and opened the Scriptures to us?" It's often the in-between times that the greatest spiritual growth is happening, taking place in our lives. If you're here today and you've not yet established a relationship with the Lord, it's such times that we see our need for God. It's amazing to me what it takes sometimes for people to truly to be able to see their need for God. And it's also interesting that when a tragedy occurs, it seems like there's almost this instant reflex to pray. To pray as a people, to pray as a nation, to pray as a church, to pray individually. They see that need to pray. You see, it doesn't take a lot of faith when you're basking in the conscious presence of God. But when He seems absent, and it seems as if He has hidden His face, it requires real faith. Hebrews chapter 11, verse 1 says, "Now faith is confidence of what we hope for, it's assurance of what we do not see." You see, it's in the in-between times that it really reveals our hearts. It's in the in-between times that it answers the question, the all-important question, of whether we want more of God or more from God. Let's face it, most people today, especially Western Christians, aren't so interested in having more of God, but they're certainly interested in having more from God. They certainly want more blessings, more material things, and recognition, and that their careers would go well, all of those kinds of things. They want more from God, and thank God for all that comes to us from His hand, but do we really want more of God? Could it be that our lives are most pleasing to the Lord in those times when we do not feel a thing, but remain obedient and choose to believe and have faith in God? We can be absolutely nothing about some life situations except become bitter or simply to wait for for the Lord. Our part is to wait and to wait patiently. Now, when we read about waiting in the Bible, it is very much an active waiting. It's not a doing nothing. It is very much an active waiting. We do so not with defeated resignation, but we do so with expectant hope. Faith grows in the soil of waiting. Look at the last half of verse 1. David said, "He turned to me and he heard my cry." Now, for God to hear your cry, you first have to cry out to God. And typically, we really don't cry out to God unless we're facing something in our lives. We're facing something that is far beyond ourselves. See, David said, "He turned to me and he heard my cry." And throughout Psalms, throughout this series, we have seen David again and again and again crying out to God. When's the last time that you did that? When's the last time that you can look at your Christian life and say, "It is there, it's at this time that I really cried out to God"? When's the last time that the church, the people of God, not just this church, but the church in general, has truly cried out to God? David testified that when he did, he heard my cry. Now, we're no longer parents with children in the home. We have adult children, we have grandchildren, but going back to when our daughters were born, it was amazing how my wife could hear the faintest cry of our daughters. Isn't it amazing how mothers can do that? It's equally amazing how a father can hear the same cry and remain deathly still. I can remember laying really still at times. I told my wife one day, I said, "You know, honey, I sure wish there was more that I could do, but since you're nursing, there's nothing really that I can do." And she thought for a moment, she said, "Yes, there is. You can bring the baby into the room, and then you can take the baby back to bed." I wish I had not asked that question. David said, "I cried out and the Lord heard my cry." We further know that God responded to his cry. You know, there are times that people can cry out to us and we can't solve all their problems. I have Marley, who I call my curly-headed granddaughter. She is 4 years old. And a few weeks ago, I took her to the park in the little village where we live. And I was sitting on a bench there and getting her ready to go play, and she went to the merry-go-round, and there was a big bee hovering around that, and it landed, and she came back. She said, "Papa, there's a bee." Well, I took off my sandal, and I went up, and that bee was hovering real close to, and I hit it as hard as I could. It was crushed, and I said, "I showed that bee who's boss. Marley, you can go play on the merry-go-round," which she did. And then there's a big playset with swings and all kinds of stuff, and no one else was there. So she went over there to play. I didn't know there were bees there as well. And I was sitting on the bench, and I'd taken some pictures of her that I was looking at. And all of a sudden, she is crying out, "Papa, Papa." And I look behind her, and there's bees swarming, and there's a bee following her. And she said, "Papa, please tell them who's boss." And as I looked at a number of bees there and one behind her, I recognize, listen, she can cry out, but I can't solve this problem. You know, sometimes we're like that. Lord, show them who's boss. Show them who's boss. David knew what it was to cry out to God. And when we cry out to God, it gets God's attention. Without God, you will see what only you can do. That's true in your life. Live your life without God, you will see what you can do. You may be able to accomplish a whole lot in your own ability and your own natural talent, but you'll come to a day where it won't mean very much. I can't tell you how many people I've had who've accomplished a lot, who've earned a lot, who've achieved a lot, but yet they're empty on the inside. So without God, you will see what only you can do, but with God, you will see what only God can do. I want us to look here at just the next few verses and consider with me some things only God can do in your life. And for the believer, I'm telling you today, it's worth waiting on God. It's worth praying. It's worth actively waiting upon God, placing your faith and your trust in Him. If you're facing an impossibility, it's worth waiting. It's worth praying, even if that's waiting and praying for weeks, for months, or even for years. And if you're here today and you don't know the Lord, I believe that there's a message in this psalm for you as well. He is able to help you. He is able to come to your aid. The first thing that I see here that only God can do. First, only God can rescue you. Look at the first part of verse 2, the first half of verse 2. David writes, "He lifted me out of the slimy pit, out of the mud and the mire." Now again, we don't know what David was facing in his life. And here we believe he's likely using metaphors just as we would to describe a situation in our life. But one thing is very clear. Whatever the circumstance of David's life, David was going down. And he felt like he was going down fast. Now for the prophet Jeremiah, in Jeremiah chapter 38, it was literal. He was in prison in an underground cistern, and verse 6 tells us it had no water, only mud, and Jeremiah sank down into the mud. Every time I read that in my devotional reading, as I read through scriptures, I always think, you know, here's a prophet of God. Here's a person who has declared the word of the Lord. Here's a person who has lived the life. They find themselves in a underground cistern, and I've been in one of them in Israel, and at the bottom there is mud. He's been lowered down. There is not food. There is not provision. And here is this man of God, and he is sinking down into the mud. Look at the words David used to describe his experience. He said, a slimy pit, mud, mire. Again, all these are metaphors that David is using to describe the circumstances of his life. Perhaps you can relate to David. Have you ever had a time in your life when you felt like your life was just going down? It was just going down. There didn't seem to be an answer. It didn't seem like there was anyone to be able to rescue you. But David goes on to say, "The Lord lifted me out." In other words, God came to my rescue. And whether you're a believer or an unbeliever today, I want you to know that God can come to your rescue. God knows just how to rescue. We can fail in our rescue attempts. I couldn't take care of the bees. I couldn't show them who was boss, but I want you to know God can show every situation that you may face in your life. He can show those situations who is boss if you will wait upon the Lord. An old hymn we used to sing in the church, usually on Sunday night. We sang it with great gusto and hand clapping. I can remember it as a youth. "He brought me out of the miry clay. He set my feet on the rock to stay. He puts a song in my heart today, a song of praise." Hallelujah. God can bring you out. The second thing I see here, and I see in the last part of verse 2, "He set my feet on a rock. He gave me a firm place to stand." What God did for David, He can do for you. First, only God can rescue you. But in the last part of this verse, we see only God can stabilize you. Only God can take you from sinking down to standing up. The word rock here is symbolic of God's protection that follows His intervention or His rescue. Our rock is the Lord Jesus Christ. We sing it often, "On Christ the solid rock I stand, all other ground is sinking sand." In 1 Corinthians chapter 10, the first four verses there, the Apostle Paul writes about the children of Israel and their experience in the wilderness, 40 days of wilderness wanderings, 40 days in the, or 40 years rather, in the desert. And Paul visits that experience in Israel's history and writes, "For I do not want you to be ignorant of the fact, brothers and sisters, that our ancestors were all under the cloud and that they all passed through the sea. They were all baptized into Moses in the cloud and in the sea. They all ate the same spiritual food. They drank the same spiritual drink, for they drank from the spiritual rock that accompanied them." And listen to these words, "And that rock was Christ." You know, one thing when you think of the rock in the wilderness, you think of You think of one time Moses speaking to the rock, another time he hits the rock. Matter of fact, he's kept out of the promised land because of his anger and disobedience and not following the Lord's instructions as the Lord had given him that. But out of the rock came nutrition. Out of the this rock not only stabilizes us, this rock also gives us spiritual nutrition. And so only God can stabilize you. Another thing, we see it in verse 3. It says, He put a new song in my mouth, a hymn of praise to our God. Now, I want to focus primarily here, but something else that I see is that only God can change you. Only God can change you. This is true whether you're a believer, because if you're a believer, I don't care how long you've been a Christian, you're still in the process of change. You are still a work in project, in process. Rhonda and I last year were in Charlotte, North Carolina, and we had the opportunity to visit the Graham Museum there, and part of that is a garden, beautiful garden area where Billy Graham, when he passes, will be buried. His wife is buried there, and I took a picture of her gravestone, and her stone said exactly what she wanted it to say. End of construction. Thank you for your patience. Well, I think that could be said of all of us, couldn't it? End of construction. Thank you for your patience. See, we are all a work in progress, and only God can change us. You know, really coming to the end of your rope in life can be a very good thing if it causes you to look to Christ, if it causes you to turn to Him, if it causes you to say, hey, I can't save myself, I can't straighten this out. And that's what David did. That's one of the reasons I believe that David's called a man after God's own heart. If you just look at some of the record that we have of the things David did, his adultery and murder, all kinds of various things that took place in David's life, his multiple failures. There weren't just a few. There's many of them there. But we find David always crying out for God. We find David always repenting to God. And because of that, he is described as a man after God's own heart. Only God could change David. Only God can change you. The key words here are he put. Did you know there's some things only God can put in your lives, in your life? You can't get them there. You can't go to seminar. You can't go away to a special revival services or whatever. There's things that only God can put in you. And David said, he put a new song in my mouth, a hymn of praise to our God. Isn't it amazing how we work so hard to change other people when we have such a dismal track record of changing ourselves? We work so hard at changing other people, but have such a dismal track record of changing ourselves. Just as God can only change us, God can only change other people as well. Well, I see something else here. It's in the last part of verse 3. Many will see and fear the Lord and put their trust in Him. Only God can use you. Only God can take your life, my life, any life, and use it for His glory. Out of the forge of our own trials, God intends to use our song to assist others in putting their trust in Him. I want you to know, with God, nothing is wasted. Nothing is wasted. No trial, no adversity, no sickness, no sin. Absolutely nothing is wasted with God. Even our own sin, even turning our own way, going our own way, nothing is wasted with God if we will bring it to Him. And there's nothing that we go through that cannot be used to help others put their trust in the Lord. You may be asking, how could God possibly use what I'm going through or what I have been through? The answer is this: He can if you will let Him. He can if you will let Him. I love Romans chapter 8, verse 28, as many of you do. And we know that all things, not some things, not selected things, But all things God works for the good of those who love Him, who have been called according to His purpose. Note that it does not say God is working hard to make us happy. It says He works in us to fulfill His purpose. You know, time won't permit us to really to unpack verses 4 and 5. I said we're going to primarily focus upon the first five verses. But verse 4 is a beatitude. A beatitude is something that if you do it, you're going to be happy. We're most familiar with Matthew chapter 5, the Beatitudes of Jesus. I've preached series, taught series on each one of the Beatitudes that are mentioned there. Now, when we think of happy, it may not be happy as you think, as we define happiness today, but it's joy. It's the joy of the Lord. And so verse 4 is really a beatitude. It says, "Blessed is the one who trusts in the Lord, who does not look to the proud, to those who turn aside to false gods." Listen, if you trust in the Lord, if you turn to the Lord, the psalmist says, David says, you're going to be happy. You're going to be happy. You're going to know this is the right direction. There's a lot of places you can turn in the world. You can turn to alcohol, you can turn to drugs, you can turn to addictions, you can turn to pleasure, you can turn to all kinds of things. But what you will find is those things, in the long run, always leave you even more empty than you were before. All of them wear off. Guess what? God doesn't wear off. God doesn't wear off. And it goes on to say, "Does not look to the proud, to those who turn aside to false gods." In other words, we don't look to those who really don't have hope, don't have answers. And then verse 5 is, I want to read it for you. It sort of reminds me a little bit of Jeremiah chapter 29 and verse 11. We need to recognize that we have a God who has plans. God who has plans. What's your plan for your life? What's your plan for this week? Now, I'm one of those people, I'm always looking ahead. I'm always, you know, I'll even divide the to-do list up and things that need to get done or things I need to accomplish. I'll divide those by the day. I'm already doing that. I've already got things listed for Tuesday and Wednesday and Thursday and Friday and Saturday, things that need to be done that day. That's one of the things that the gadgets, the smartphones, makes it even easier. And then they sync to all of my devices, so no excuse for not getting it done because I've got it on everything that I virtually look at. But we need to recognize we may have plans, but did you know God's got plans? "Many, Lord, my God, are the wonders you have done, the things you have planned for us." Jeremiah 29:11 says, "For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you, not to harm you, plans to give you a future, plans to give you a hope." And when God rescues you and when you cry out to God, it comes to the place you recognize, hey, His plan's not just to get me out of the mud and mire. Guess what? God's got a plan. He's got a purpose for my life. And it goes on to say, "None can compare with you. Were I to tell of your deeds, they would be too many to declare." Maybe today you're at a time in your life that you feel as David did. If you look a little bit later in that chapter, this is likely a separate incident in David's life. But verse 12 says of Psalm 40, "For troubles without number surround me. My sins have overtaken me, and I cannot see. They are more than the hairs of my head, and my heart fails within me." Man, you imagine being in a situation like that. My troubles without number. My sins have overtaken me. But I love verse 13. "Be pleased, Lord, to save me. Come quickly, Lord, to help me." I want to ask you that question yet again. What are you waiting for? David said, "I waited patiently." I waited patiently. If you're here today and you're a follower of Jesus Christ, I want to encourage you to wait patiently. I'm not saying it's always easy to do so, but to wait patiently. You may end up waiting a lot longer than what you thought or what you dreamed, but if you wait patiently for the Lord, guess what? It is going to be worth it. Maybe the word of the Lord for you today is simply, don't give up. Don't give up. Maybe you're here today and you just feel like giving up. You just feel like throwing in the towel. You've been through so much. You're facing so much. There's uncertainty about tomorrow. You just feel like giving up. Perhaps today the word of the Lord from this psalm for you is simply this. Don't give up. Wait patiently for the Lord. Keep believing. Keep praying. Keep claiming. Or if you don't know Christ today, the word is to allow Him to rescue you, to allow Him to change your life. Would you bow your heads with me for just a moment as we prepare to respond to God's word? This is Back to Church Sunday, and I know I've met some guests of friends who are here, and maybe you came with a friend, maybe you saw advertisement. We targeted thousands and thousands of Facebook accounts. We received a lot of response from that. We were really amazed at all the response that we received from that online. We recognized that we would not have thousands and thousands of people that were here, but we were able to touch. Others were able to see it. Maybe you just came on your own today. If so, then we're so pleased that you are here. You know, I'm about to ask you two of the most important questions that you may ever be asked in your life. I've asked it to a lot of people over the years. Had a lot of different responses. But before we respond further to God's Word, if you're here today and you have not yet established a personal relationship with Christ, this is for you. I want to take a moment to talk to you. I want to take a moment to pray for you. I will not single you out. I will not embarrass you or anything like that. Would not do that. Others are not looking around. But I want to ask you two questions. If you were to die today, do you know for sure that you would go to heaven? Now, the Bible tells us it's appointed man wants to die, then comes a judgment. All of us are going to die. I was at a seminar this last week, and they were comparing the lifespan of a human to the lifespan of the church, and they had all the labels. And what I recognized by my age, I was no longer at the peak, but I was now on the downward part as far as age and where I am in life. Well, it's a reality for all of us. But if you were to die today, do you have that assurance that you would go to heaven? If you don't, I want you to know that you can have it before you leave today. You can have it before you leave today. The second question I would ask you, if you think the first one's sort of tough, well, the second one can be rather tough as well. If you were to die today and stand before God, and all of us will, and God were to ask you, why should I let you into heaven? What would you tell God? Now, I've had a lot of responses to that question, but I believe these two questions really sort of clear up where a person stands spiritually. If God were to ask you, why should I let you into heaven? What would you tell God? If you say, well, I'm a good person, or you, whatever your denomination affiliation may be, Baptist, Methodist, Presbyterian, Assembly of God, Catholic, there's so many of them. If you offer God a label, or if you offer God a track record or anything else, the only right answer to that is I have trusted in Jesus Christ alone for my salvation, for my rescue. We looked at it today. He brought me out of the miry clay. He set my feet upon a rock to stay. The most glorious times He ever does that is the moment that we give our hearts to Jesus Christ. Do you know for certain that you would go to heaven? If you don't, I want to just pray with you to establish a personal relationship with Christ. No one's looking around.